Okay, Darren.
Yeah, I was just going to briefly just comment on Bax. I don't know if people know it. I think it's fascinating that Bax is actually, if he's known at all today, apart from like meetings like this, he's actually considered in some circles as like the father of the men's rights activist movement, which is kind of hilarious because of his misogyny. And we reference to what Adam said, and I take on board what he's saying. Well, why was he tolerated within the SDF? And I take to agree with what Adam's saying. But I just had a quick look at his like section on the Marxist Internet Archive, and there was an article published in 1887 in the Today magazine, which I think was like a theoretical magazine of like the SDF, and it was entitled "Some Heterodox Views on the Women's Question." So it was obviously even then what he was like pronouncing was very much seen as like out of step with like the Social Democratic Federation, the socialist movement in Britain in the 19th century. And maybe Adam or other people here listening know more about it, but I always got the impression that a lot of these views that he expressed, he kind of maybe dishonestly kind of like made a point of like publishing them in books separate from like the labor movement press. On very quickly on the business of founder members, actually the best person to talk about this would be Keith Scholey, who's an ex-member of the party. He actually produced a really interesting document about founder members of the SPGB, where he tried to track down info. Yeah, there was members, female members of the party at its foundation. In their own right, they weren't just wives or sisters. They were active members in their own right. Obviously, always in the minority in relation to the party. But a quick question to Paddy. I was told years ago, I don't know if this is true, and this is maybe like unique if it is true, but at one point, Lancaster branch was populated purely by women. There wasn't a single man in the branch. I don't know if that's true. It was the late Bob Beckett that told me that. I don't know if Paddy can verify it or not, but it's a wee bit of trivia. Thank you.
Yeah, I can verify that. It was Bob Beckett and Seven Women. And he said he was scared shitless.
Okay, Mike.
Yeah, Howard, 14% of the people who signed the 142 or 143 Declaration of Principles were women. I did a study of it when I was having to stay overnight at head office to do work there. It's getting boring, so I used to read through the EC minutes and I read through the founding documents. It's very hard to read some of it in handwriting. And I read that and the one that Simon Wigley did, transcribing it. And that's the figure I got, 14%.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, just to correct Paddy, you said when you joined there was no women in the party. You just corrected yourself, said it was Bob Beckett was as well when you joined. I don't know what year that was, but how do we how did you get how did they all leave? Is that your problem?
Mike, I'll tell you over several beers.
There's no one else in the queue, but I think Janet was thinking about saying something. Mike's joined, okay.
No, sorry, yeah.
Okay. Give it a couple of minutes, see if anyone else wants to make a comment. Sorry, okay, Darren.
Just a quick comment. Yeah, quite rightly we beat ourselves up about the imbalance in the party. Of course, totally agree. Despite the fact that our clause four dates back to 1904, but can we also acknowledge that in my experience, some of the most authoritarian leftists I've ever met in my life are women. So it's like maybe I'm turning into Belfort Baxmal old age. I apologise, but it's just. I just, you know, I think the party sometimes, it's like that old Woody Allen film where, like, we're in the train carriage and it's all black and white and miserable. Christ, Woody Allen's a bit worse. You not mention Woody Allen, but he's looking at the windy at something across the way, and everybody's having a party and enjoying themselves. And I sometimes think the party really does beat itself up at times about certain things. You know, sometimes we're right to do it, sometimes we're wrong to do it, you know. So just my 10 cents on that.
Well, I don't think that the proportion of women was any higher in other organisations. So SLP was even worse, and the ILP and things, they wouldn't have had much higher percentage than that.
Can I speak now?
Go ahead, Mike. Yeah.
Right, yeah, okay. I was going to ask Adam, I didn't realise I was still muted. I was going to ask Adam very quickly. I didn't hear everything he said at the start. What happened to Marx's son? That's one thing. Darren, that's a misogynist remark saying some of the horrible feminists were women. I think I didn't catch what you said, but I think it's very misogynist. The whole idea that you expect them to come out, hold on, the whole idea that you expect them to come out of the 19th century into the 20th century when they're totally legally servants of the men. They had no, in this country, they had no legal rights whatsoever. It's a bit hard to sort of blame them for being like that. I blame the men. It's always the men at the time. And I still blame the men in the party now.
Can I quickly reply to that? Maybe there was a crosswise. I wasn't referring to the early socialist movement. I was actually referring to the left in my experience in, like, the, you know, the 1990s and the 2000s.
Yes,
various Trotskyist organizations. And if you were to say to these authoritarians within these organizations, these, like, you know, name names like Lindsay German, Julie Watson, the leader of the Spartacus League, I can't remember her name, and say, oh, you're like this purely because of the patriarchy within your organization, they'd probably give you a flea in your ear. You know, I'm sorry that, you know, maybe they're just replicating the culture within that organization, but they were replicating that culture. You know, they were quite happy to play that kind of domineering, top-down mindset to the rank and file, male or female, you know, and because they were at the head table, you know, on the central committee, the central organizers, the full-time cadre, et cetera, blah, 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 they were quite happy to perpetuate that. And in the process, some of these people covered up sort of genuine sort of, you know, abuse scandals within that within those organizations for decades. You know, it happened in the Workers' Revolutionary Party. It happened in the Socialist Workers' Party. It happened in the International Socialist Organization in America, the sister party, the SWP, to the point where they actually dissolved the organization. You know, sorry, Mike, you know, these things go on, you know. Unfortunately, you know, so
I still disagree with you, but can I say a few, because you said you're going to do it quickly, but you spent about 2 minutes naming them all. Let me get some words in. I disagree with you. They might be replicating it, but they're not as misogynist as the men. They might be emulating them, but they're not as misogynist as the men. There's so few of them, but most of the men are misogynist, and even in the Socialist Party, in my experience. But that's just my experience. One of the reasons why I left is in the 70s.
Okay, I think that's caused a bit of an interest. Paddy?
Well, just to, I think what this is the Margaret Thatcher argument, isn't it? Is that if you've got an environment or a hierarchy that's set up in a certain way so that only the most forceful bullying people can possibly, you know, get to the top of it. So you could talk about the Tory Party, or you could talk about the SWP. I mean, it kind of stands to reason, doesn't it? If you're a woman and you and you're in that organisation, and that's how it is, then you're only going to succeed if you behave like that. You know, if you fit in with the sort of the group culture. So then, you know, after that, for somebody else to come along and say, oh, well, you know, women were just as bad as men. Look at Margaret Thatcher. Look at Lindsay German. Do you know what I mean? I think it's a little bit unfair. You know, these all the other sort of reasonable people are filtered out by the culture. So I think that it's actually the culture that's the problem, you know, rather than pointing fingers at individual people in it.
Okay, Mark?
Thank you, Adam, very much. Actually, I didn't have anything to say on the subject that's just sort of kicked off. I had a kind of separate point. I don't know whether if it's okay for me to raise a separate point.
Yeah, why not? Go for
yeah.
it.
Okay. Well, actually, because it's really I'm very interested in historical subjects, and I guess we all are, and I guess it's part of knowing where we're at today. You have to kind of know where we've come from, et cetera. And one of the sort of, gaps that I have in my own knowledge, but I also think somehow it's a gap in at least my experience of the party's discussion, is actually exactly that knowledge of the history of the party. And I know that we're not trying to set ourselves up to be some kind of messianic, I guess we're not, but a lot of the discussions, for example, on the women's issue, we could actually also discuss on the women's issue the issue of how that question has been dealt with in the party. Of course, you know, we have a basic position, but how the various discussions or characters, figures that have been in the party over the years, representing different views or contributing to those questions. And I know, for example, just to give a, and so I'm saying I would love to, you know, I could even imagine that we could have a open mic night or something where we could throw out questions that we've always wanted to ask about the founders, about what things were, what the position of the party was at different times. And let me give you an example of an area that I find very interesting. And that is the whole question of how we define socialism, because I think we probably agree that our statement of principles, our declaration of principles, has a pretty, let's as it were, essentialist definition of what socialism is. And around that essentialist definition, you could have various interpretations, even regarding the question of let's say the existence of some form of tokens that would not be money as in capital, but would actually be some kind of labor vouchers type of thing. And for example, if I've been reading lately some of the socialist standards from the 1920s, and various things are said there that would indicate perhaps that there was a let's say not such a crystallized definition of socialism as we kind of handed out now. I think in some ways a little bit, perhaps I may say, maybe glibly at times, no money, no state, no this, no that, as though they're all equivalent issues. And, you know, I've been thinking to myself, I'd love to have to actually do or hear some treatment of how that those things have developed within the party, that in the 20s and the 30s, how we get to where we are at today, so that we can actually have some perspective on it. So what I'm really saying is, I think some of these historical questions, not only historical in terms of the big figures, the overspanning figures like the Luxembourgs and the Eleanor Marxes and the other figures, but some of the figures in relation to our own history, the Impossibilist Revolt. Yes, I think we obviously, probably many of us don't know enough about that as would be great to know, but also how our party has developed and, you know, might give us some depth. So some discussions on that, some presentations on that. I know that people have to do it, but, you know, I'm sure if Adam just sat down and we could all say questions for Adam or questions for Paddy or questions for Darren, so we could dig out some of that stuff. I would find that if we could create a way of getting that stuff out, it would probably be very useful, especially for those of us who are relatively new. Sorry for that very long thing, but anyway, thanks a lot. And thanks, Adam.
Yeah, I think that's quite a reasonable statement. There's quite a few questions there. I guess, Adam, would you like to comment?
Yeah, well, it so happened that what I did during the was to scan in all the articles from the 1920s and then put them onto our site. So I've read these articles, and it's quite clear. One thing is quite clear about the state. Nationalization, you know, was just rejected as a form of state slavery, quite apart from paying compensation and buying out the old owners. On the question of free access, I think the party was more inclined towards free distribution. The party never thought there would be money in a socialist society, but I think that it was rather than people, like we say today, free access according to some term. It was more like making things available free for people to take. I don't know when the change took place. Probably in the 40s or the 30s, end of the 30s and 40s. There's one reference in one article in 1920 to a socialist government, and it's an article by Jack Fitzgerald on the situation in Germany just after the First World War. And he says the only justification for a socialist to participate in a government would be to organize free elections. It wouldn't be to participate in to rule capitalism, but to organize elections to find out. So I mean, the situation in the 1920s is 100 years ago, the same as it is today from all points of view. I mean, people refer to it as Mr. That. Maybe if people can tolerate it, we could ask ex-comrade Keith Scholey if he would come and give a talk on this. But I don't know whether he'd behave himself. That's the problem.
Okay, Pat next.
Sorry, just took a moment to unmute. Yes, well, I'd like to say something about it as a woman in the party. I consider myself to be in the party as a socialist who happens to be a woman and not the other way round. And it's been my experience that women in the party can play the part that they wish to play, that they feel able to play, that it hasn't been a problem. And I didn't even notice when I joined that I was so, it was the ideas that grabbed me, and I was so pleased. I did find it difficult getting to a meeting because I had to go on my own, and the first West Ham branch met on a Thursday evening at a school in Upton Park. And the first Thursday I decided to go, I chickened out and didn't go. But the next Thursday came along and I thought, well, I'll have to go. I can't live with myself if I don't go. But when I got there, the school was in complete darkness. The playground was in darkness, but there were a couple of men standing over by the entrance. So I don't know whether one would do it today, but I went across this dark playground and asked if this was where the Socialist Party of Great Britain would be meeting. And yes, it was. And I can't tell you, what the numbers were. We met in a classroom, which was a little bit strange because the desks were a bit small where we sat. But I was just pleased to have got there and I wanted to help. I wasn't worried about joining, but the members there seemed to be more eager that I should join. I actually wrote the chapter in Questions of the Day in the 70s on women, and I asked Comrade Hardy about the position in the SDF. What was the attitude? And I popped upstairs a moment ago, but I booked down the wrong folder, so I haven't got the precise information with me. But I asked him about it, and he wrote out something for me about the position. And I think he referred me to the Manifesto of English Socialists, but I'm not sure about that. But at some time, I had occasion and was able to look in some very early minute books of the SDF. And it was interesting to see the women did organise the making capes and things. And it didn't really seem to be untoward, because they were contributing what they were able to contribute. We didn't mean that they didn't speak at meetings or didn't take part, though I couldn't tell that entirely from the minutes, but I was interested in that. But according to Comrade Hardy, that you know, they did have an equal position. So that's about it, really. Thank you.
Okay, I've got no idea who Comrade Hardy was or is. Perhaps you could just enlighten me on that, Pat.
Well, he was he died some years ago, but he was a long time member in the party. He was editing on the Standard, wrote in the Standard, and he was very, very good on economics and explaining things. And though I can remember in my early days when I heard him speaking, I understood perfectly, but afterwards I couldn't necessarily remember things so well. But there are articles, I think, that you can get online from him, but there's in the Standard. He was a regular contributor on economics.
Oh, thanks for that, Pat. Mark?
Yeah, well, once again, you know, I feel like a little bit, I don't want to overshadow what Pat said on the women's issue, but again, I think it underlines the fact that you know, like for example, Hardy, you know, is a really prolific writer and authority in the party, and I believe, am I right, comrades, that he was part of the split? I think he may have been.
Sadly, yes.
Yeah, and I just think that some of these things are really helpful to know for orientation. And also, I think they deepen knowledge. So, I mean, you know, I think that it would be great to hear what Pat has to say. She has a, you know, fund of knowledge on all these issues, right? And so that would be awesome. But if I may, if I can return, I just want to, if I may return to what Adam said, because I took the opportunity when I was at the summer school of buying a bunch of old Socialist Standards from the 20s. I know they're all, of course, they're on Darren's website and on the party's website as well. But you know, somehow reading them, you know, physically, somehow, I don't know, it makes a bigger impression on me. And if you don't mind, let me read a couple of words from one article in September 1923 on socialization or nationalization. I think that was the one you may have been referring to, Adam. The writer says about the distribution of goods, the details will not matter, do not matter. Many means will suggest themselves by which each worker, having performed his share of the necessary labor, could be enabled to receive what he needed from the common store. There might be depots similar to shops where people would present their tokens of labor performed and make their choice of goods. If so, the actual machinery for distributing goods would not differ greatly from that of today. The difference, the revolution, will be in the basis of production. The goods which are made will be made for the direct and sole purpose of satisfying the needs of the makers. Society will have organized itself for cooperative production. No room in that day for any who will not work, unless they are feeble or children. It will be the day of the workers taking possession, etc. So, you know, that I feel that kind of article, for example, would be a great informing text for a discussion on the question of, for example, will there be a duty to work in the socialist Commonwealth? Apparently, some comrades, distinguished enough to be able to be printed in the December 1923 edition of the Socialist Standard, thought it would. And some comrades apparently thought that maybe there would be a place for tokens of labor. And I think, Darren, I'm right in recalling that, did you not write at the end of that article a comment saying labor vouchers? I think you did, right? All I'm saying is I feel like some of those things are helpful in, you know, that we don't just have the position we have coming out of the air, and also in trying to work out what elements of our position are, let's say, have a certain continuity, where we differ from the past. All of that, I think, is valuable. So, you know, I'm just broadening out the question of history, that I just feel like it's great to know more about our history, not to be sort of exclusivist or sectarian, but, just to work through some of our positions and some of these characters. Although we don't want leaders, there are some outstanding figures, you know, people who distinguish themselves just by their knowledge and communicative skills. And we have some of them with us today, and we have many of them with us from over the years who are still with us by their writings. And, you know, I feel we have such a treasure. And of course, I know we access it privately and everything, because we're all, hopefully many of us are going back to the back issues and reading this or reading that. But somehow I don't know how we could do it. And I don't know if it needs to be so formal, but for this evening, I know that this is a bit of a tangent perhaps, but I feel quite stimulated this evening that we've been able to integrate both the wider history of the socialist movement and the history of our part of that.
Okay, sadly, I don't think that so many people are visiting the website and reading all the standards, but maybe Paddy might have a mention of that. Howard, next.
No, it's okay. I was just answering somebody's question. Well, it was yours, Nick, about Hardy. Hardcastle used to sign himself H. His articles in the Standard were signed H. That was Hardy, a legend within the party anyway. Obviously, I say that jokingly.
Okay, thanks for that. I guess I shouldn't ask why he split, but that's for another time. Darren?
Yeah, I mean, on the issue of Hardy, you know, Edgar Hardcastle, Pat touched upon it. You know, those people who know the history of the SPGB and know the history of Hardy's contribution, they think primarily in terms of his economic writings. I would really urge members to read his articles from the 1920s. Adam's done a sterling job sort of scanning a lot of stuff in. He was, you know, Hardy as a young man, he was a conscientious objector during the First World War. He was the son of a founder member. Understand, he went to a minor public school. One of the few, you know, not a lot of members were university graduates at that time. He was a graduate from the London School of Economics. But I'd really urge reading these 20s articles from the 1920s. He was actually a really funny writer early on. I think he fell into a certain style of writing, or it was expected a style of writing from maybe like the 40s onwards, where it was all about, you know, examining sort of Marx and Keynes, etc. But Adam scanned in an article a couple of days ago, and I put it on the blog, Rationalization and Unemployment, from the June 1929 issue of the Standard. And it's a long-ass article. It's like something like 4.5 pages long, but it's hilarious. So I honestly really urge people to take it, because it's as good as Steve Cook, another good writer back in the day who a lot of people liked his humour. It's as good as Steve Coleman's in terms of humour, in terms of political humour. I was really impressed by it. In the same issue, he's has an article on the Communist Party deciding it was during the time of the third period where the Communist Party declared everybody social fascist and was going to attack everybody and smash the state. You know, he was a really, really angry writer in the 20s as well, because he was obviously a young man and maybe he just was a bit more sedate and a bit more sort of sanguine in his views as time went on. But please, his stuff from the 20s is on the Marxist Internet Archive under Edgar Hardcastle in the party's page. It's on the blog that I do. And it's also, Adam's done most of the stuff from the 20s on the party's website. You know, I think if you're interested in this stuff, you think you know Hardy's writings from reading these stuff from the 60s, 70s, and 80s, I think you'll be really surprised how different he was as a writer and how equally enjoyable his writings were, you know. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for that. Adam?
I haven't got a cue there, but do you want me to say something about the embarrassing?
We missed all of that, Adam. You'll have to try again. Maybe you're talking too loud into the mic and it's clicking.
Well, I haven't got a mic. But anyway, Mike Brown raised the question of Marx's son. It's a bit embarrassing. Do you want to hear about it?
Yes, please.
Right. When Marx's wife was pregnant, he had sex with his servant, and a son was born. Now, Marx didn't recognize this, but Engels, who was a gentleman, let it be understood that he was. I don't think he was, but the son was called Freddy de Muff. And he was involved in the. In fact, Eleanor Marx knew him and presumably knew who he was, and they kept in touch and corresponded. In fact, they corresponded about what Aveling had done to her. But he I think joined the Labour Party at some point. He was in the AEU, but I think he probably did have children. I imagine could be other direct descendants of Marx somewhere in London or Liverpool. But anyway, I mean, I don't know whether you think Marx was a cad as Aveling was with his servant.
Paddy?
No, I was just putting in a comment that you can hear Hardy talks on our website and the audio index, look in the 1980s and 70s.
Okay. Right then, so we've got Howard.
I just put on that there, Nick, to answer your question about how come Hardy sort of left the party when the split took place and the Socialist Studies Group was set up. By that time, Hardy was an elderly man, very elderly, and he'd ceased to be active in the party in the sense of giving talks, coming to meetings, attending conferences, and so on. He just happened to be in one of the branches that split. There were two branches split from the party, Camden and somebody else will know, North London, I can't quite remember. Two branches split anyway, and Hardy happened to be in one of them, and he simply sort of stayed in that branch, and that branch was then became a sort of integral part of this new organization, which actually put across the same case as us anyway, but you know, that's a different story, I suppose.
Okay, thanks for that, Howard. That's lightning. Mike next.
Yeah, that was North West London. That was the other branch, Howard. And Howard, please don't rewrite history. They were expelled by a vote of the membership of the party in 1991. that's trying not to rewrite history. It's on. I lived through that, so yeah, I know what happened. The 3 articles that year.
Yeah, I was going to make the same point. They didn't split. They were expelled for undemocratic. And it so happens I was the general secretary at the time, and I had the dishonor to have to sign Hardy's Form F. But basically, they were in a, he was in a branch which defied Commons resolution three times in the three-party poll. In the end, the membership went to a vote of the membership, and they were, the two branches were expelled for undemocratic action. And Hardy was a member of one of those. One of those branches, as has been said.
Steve, did you have a comment to make on that?
No, I just put that up for information. Nick, people put a queue if they want to make a contribution. Otherwise, it's just for info. Sorry.
Yeah, okay. No worries. There's no one else in the queue. That's why I asked whether you wanted to say something.
Just thank you very much for the invitation. Just very quickly, there's some interesting stuff on. I think it's how it says. They basically put the same case as us, as you'd expect.
They might put the same basic case as us, but they don't actually put the same case as us. They're opposed to workers struggling for political democracy, which they regard as a reform. They denounce the women's liberation, gay liberation, and all that. I mean, they're not putting the same case as us.
I stand corrected. The articles I've read, that's ours. Yeah, okay, stand corrected.
You don't need to correct yourself, Steve.
We're finding out which way people voted in that famous poll that expelled them.
Okay, Vin.
No, I just wrote something. They wrote this very interesting article called "Why Buick is Wrong."
What is that? The Adam Buick?
Come on, Adam.
No, it's
complete.
It's an article about a motor car.
Oh, that's. I'm glad you corrected.
No, it wasn't. He's a lying bugger.
Right, Darren, have you got anything to say?
I was just replying to Vince's comment.
Well, I'm not sure whether we've got any more comments now. It's 9:15. Unless someone wants to make some more comments, should we wind it up? Oh, Steve, you've got a question.
Yeah, just very quickly. I wonder if... if Adam could make a few comments about you've used a lot in your speech that might not be familiar to a lot of people, like the way that social democracy that doesn't mean what it means today. Could you just clarify some of that for social democracy? Why we use socialism and communism? And things like that. Is that a bit too vague question?
No, well, that's social democracy was what the Marxists called themselves at that time. As a matter of fact, I think Darren can correct me on this, but at the inaugural meeting, of the party in when they were discussing the name, that calling themselves Social Democrats was one of the options. So, I mean, before the First World War, social democracy was equivalent to what can you say? I can't say Marxist-based parties, but Marxist-oriented parties. I mean, today it means something different. It means what the social democratic parties, European social democratic, became. They became reformist parties. Yes, that was the word which people, and I think even various descriptions in the back numbers of the Standard, which will interest Mark. Socialism, cooperative commonwealth, republic, the socialist republic, and words like that. So I mean that was the general term which meant more or less the same as in that pre-First World War period.
Yeah, and then before that, we got Marx talking about a society of free producers, and the socialized production and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I should add that Marx himself didn't like the term social democracy, because there were people in France in 1848 who called themselves social democrats. But what they were people that stood for bourgeois democracy with a social program. So they weren't pure and simple bourgeois democrats. They were bourgeois democrats who advocated or supported various social reforms. And of course he preferred in that time to refer to his view as communist, as opposed to people in France who call themselves social democrats. But it came into being I think through the German party calling itself the Social Democratic Party of Germany.
Thanks.
Darren?
Just confirm what Adam said. I believe there was two or three suggested names when the party formed, and one was the Social Democratic Party. And they kind of dodged a bullet in a sense, because the SDF, Social Democratic Federation, did actually change their name to the Social Democratic Party in 1907. So basically what happened to us a few years back with the militant tendency, changing their name to something resembling us would have happened a lot sooner, you know?
Do you have any more questions? Okay, I mean, if there are no more questions, I guess we could wind it up. Okay, I have one question to Adam. You wanted to talk about Ruth Kenner this evening. Perhaps you can ping me separately.
Okay, I mean, it's just whether we should invite non-members to address these, but we can settle that all.
I missed that, Adam. Your mic stopped again.
It's just, I mean, most of the people all the people that have spoken on these Friday night meetings have been party members, but we need to discuss whether we want to invite non-party members to give interesting talks. But I'm sure I don't think there's any objection in principle. But we haven't exhausted all the party members. There are members speaking next month who haven't spoken here before.
Yeah, I think I'm sure the members should probably take precedence, but we did have some speakers from the Wobblies, I think, a couple of weeks back, 3 weeks ago, I believe.
Mm.
So I thought in principle, you know, the party wasn't against having external speakers. That was my understanding.
No, I'm not against having external speakers. I'm just saying that might come to that.
Sorry, Adam. Again, I only got half of that.
Yeah, I think you need to email him.
Yeah, it's probably better.
Yeah. Thanks, Nick.
Yeah, so let's communicate via email or a separate call, Adam. Do we have any more questions for this evening for Adam or anyone else want to add anything?
There's Darren there.
Ah. Darren?
No, he's already spoken.
No, I think Darren's already spoken, actually. Okay, I think at that point, if no one else is going to come in now, I think we should perhaps call it a day, 20 past nine.
I just want to say thanks very much, Adam. I'm looking forward to seeing this film about Eleanor Marx.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nick. Thank you, Adam.
Thanks, Nick. Thank you very much.